Welcome to the Sadler Lectures podcast. Responding to popular demand, I'm converting my philosophy videos into sound files you can listen to anywhere you can take an MP3. If you like what you hear and want to support my work, go to patreon.com/sadler. I hope you enjoy this lecture. One key theme that runs throughout Rainer Maria Rilke's Letters to a Young Poet is the relationship between art on the one hand and criticism of art on the other hand. Now, if you're thinking criticism is always derogatory or negational or something like that, he doesn't actually mean that. What he's talking about is something that we're much more familiar with in terms of other things, you know, movies, albums that come out, other music. Criticism can mean saying something is good, saying it's bad, saying why that's the case. It involves judgment. So it's judgments upon art rather than being art itself. And why do we indeed have criticism at all? It's in part because that's the way we publicize and call attention to and have conversations about art. Otherwise, art might linger by itself over in the corner. And criticism encompasses a lot. Later on, he's going to talk about journalism, about criticism per se, about literature, in which sometimes criticism will be embedded. We might talk about philosophy of art and beauty. We could talk about all sorts of things. Rilke himself is rather down on criticism. He thinks that it doesn't really reach art in what art is, when it's good art. In this, he would be differing from other people who are talking about art and its related topics, like, for example, Oscar Wilde, who defends the notion that criticism, literary criticism, artistic criticism, could itself be creative in kind. Rilke is going to take the opposite position, and it's there in the very first letter to Kappus. He says, "Nothing touches a work of art so little as words of criticism. They always result in more or less fortunate misunderstandings." So criticism by itself is already a misunderstanding of the work of art. And this would also apply to, say, criticism of one's way of living or approaching things, if those can be understood artistically. Now, he goes on and he says, "You're asking me, Mr. Kappus, whether your verses are any good, and I would like you to stop doing that and other things." What are the other things? "You're comparing them with other poems. You're sending them to magazines. You're getting upset when editors reject your work. Please stop doing that sort of thing." Why? Is it Rilke saying, because that brings you down and I don't like having a correspondence with somebody who's not happy all the time? No. It's because by focusing on that, you're taking the focus away from where it ought to be. He says, "Nobody can advise or help you. Here's what you need to do. Go into yourself, find out the reason that commands you to write, see whether it spread its roots into the very depths of your heart. Confess to yourself whether you would have to die if you were forbidden to write. And in essence, think about how important, how central artistic creation is to you. If it's not that important, stop doing it and do something else. And you can have a perfectly good life doing that. If it is something that you have to do, then do it." He says, "If out of this turning within, out of this immersion in your own world, poems come, you will not think of asking anyone whether they are good or not, nor will you try to interest magazines in these works. Why? You will see them as your dear natural possession, a piece of your life, a voice from it." And here's where he has a very wonderful phrase: "A work of art is good if it has arisen out of necessity. That is the only way one can judge it," Rilke says. If it has arisen out of necessity. The necessity of the artist, him or herself, needing to create, and not just to create or to express themselves, but to create this, to do this. That is what makes a piece of art truly valuable, according to Rilke. A little bit later, he talks about how criticism is really unsuited to reach art where it is. He says, "For this reason, read as little as possible of literary criticism." Why? Because literary criticism is one of two things. It's either partisan opinions, he says, which have become petrified and meaningless, hardened and empty of life, so they don't have the liveliness of the work of art, which you can have a direct relationship to. Either they become that, or they are merely clever word games. And he says, in which case one wins and tomorrow the opposite view wins, that's not useful either. So we don't want some ossified classification systems, and we don't want clever word games jockeying for a position in the art world or anything along those lines. What do we want instead? What can we use in order to grasp art? He says, works of art are of an infinite solitude, Einsamkeit in German. This is a central concept for Rilke in Letters to a Young Poet. No means of approach is so useless as criticism, because they don't get into the work of art. What then allows us to get into a work of art? He says, love. Only love can touch and hold them and be fair to them. Always trust yourself and your own feeling, as opposed to argumentation, discussions, or introductions of that sort. If it turns out that you're wrong, you go and you see an artwork and you respond to it, and you have your feeling response to it, an affective response, which, by the way, doesn't mean that it doesn't have any articulation in thought or words or anything like that. Feelings are not mute. They take shape through words and through actions. If it turns out that you're wrong, that's okay. You have the opportunity now to grow. He says, the natural growth of your inner life will eventually guide you to other insights. But love is what is required in order to come to know art as such, not criticism. Towards the end, in letter 10, he talks about half-artistic professions. And what would these professions be? Well, he says that they're the ones that pretend to be close to art, but actually deny and attack the existence of art. We might think of some great examples of this in the field of heavy metal, which is a, you know, now quite well recognized and, you know, proliferating genre of music. It's become an uber genre with all of its own little specializations in turn. But if we go back to the classic heavy metal and you think about some of the really important bands at the beginning, Black Sabbath, Deep Purple, Uriah Heep, UFO, The Scorpions, Judas Priest, Motorhead. What did the music critics have to say about these bands? This stuff is garbage. It's terrible. They said that about the first Iron Maiden album, which is probably, you know, one of the most brilliant pieces of heavy metal music that you can find out there. It matches the next five that come after it. And critics somehow missed the boat on all of that stuff. This is just cacophony, noise. Well, it didn't fit what they wanted their version of art to look like. And we could go over all sorts of other examples. I just picked the ones I'm most familiar with. So these are things that talk about, they pretend to be close to art. They're sort of hangers-on. They're satellites orbiting the genuinely creative types. They have access. But they deny and attack the existence of art. They can't recognize it when it's taking place. They take their cues from other people within the art world, as some recent estheticians have dubbed it. And they miss out on a lot of really good art as a result. Who fits into this group? Here's where Rilke says some really funny things. He says, all of journalism... Now, he's talking about the journalism of his time. All of journalism does this, journalism oriented towards art, and almost all criticism. So he's not saying that all criticism is necessarily doing it, just almost all of it. And he goes on to say three quarters of what is called and wants to be called literature. A lot of the literature is a little bit too art-focused. It's not doing its own creative thing. It's merely invoking tropes and references to, and homages and pastiches and all of this sort of stuff, not really providing a genuine, grounded, artistic locus of its own. So he goes on and he says, avoid these half-artistic professions. It says, art is just a way of living. However one lives, one can, without knowing, prepare for it. In everything real, one is closer to it, more its neighbor than in these unreal, half-artistic professions. So he's telling this man who's now doing his military duty and service, you can in fact be closer to art than the art critics, than the journalists writing about it, than the litterateurs who are invoking it. The last thing I want to point out is there is one section in here, in letter 9, where Rilke talks about criticism in a positive sense, but it would be something that one would do for oneself. He talks about Mr. Kappas's doubt, Zweifel in German, right? Which is a being caught between two different things. He says, your doubt can become a good quality if you train it. It must become knowing. It must become criticism, he says. Ask it whenever it wants to spoil something for you, why something is ugly. Demand proofs from it. Test it. You'll find it perhaps bewildered and embarrassed, perhaps also protesting. But don't give in. Insist on arguments and act in this way, attentive and persistent. Every single time, and the day will come when instead of being a destroyer, it will become one of your best workers, perhaps the most intelligent of the ones that are building your life. Do criticism differently than all the people who are paid to or are getting something out of being critics are doing it. Do it in such a way that you actually carry out a critique of critique. It wants to make arguments. It wants to make judgments. You make judgments about it and make it respond to you. And eventually, it's going to become part of you and allow you not just to be creative, but to understand the creative works of others yet better. But it will be a different kind of criticism than that of the art critics, won't it? It'll be something that has become a tool, a well-honed sort of doubt. So that's Rilke's views. We notice that art takes an absolute priority over judgments about it, that is criticism. So he's giving this young man some advice that I think is still relevant today for all of us who would like to understand and appreciate works of art, like, for example, those of Rilke himself. Special thanks to all of my Patreon supporters for making this podcast possible. You can find me on Twitter at Philosopher70, on YouTube at the Gregory B. Sadler channel, and on Facebook on the Gregory B. Sadler page. Once again, to support my work, go to patreon.com/Sadler. Above all, keep studying these great philosophical works.